This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. As I said yesterday in the promo for today's show, this is one of those days I look forward to coming to work because it's a reminder of how lucky I am to do this job. I get to talk to all kinds of people, but today is an opportunity to spend an hour with a real artist.
Embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. Embrace me, you irreplaceable you.
Thousands have embraced Anne Hampton Calloway for her many talents. Multi-platinum songwriter, singer, pianist, lyricist, arranger, actress, and on and on. She's one of the queens of New York's cabaret scene, described by the New York Times as a performer who smolders more than she sizzles. But she can sizzle, too. Known as a gifted improviser, she uses her voice as an instrument full of color and range.
I never cared much for moonlit skies. I never winked back at fireflies. But now when the stars are in your eyes, I'm beginning to see the light. I never went in for afterglow or candlelight on the mistletoe. But now when you turn the lamp down low, I'm beginning to see the light. Where I used to ramble through the park, shadow boxing in the dark. Then you came and you caused a spark. That's a four-alarm fire now. Shine. Never saw rainbows in my wine. But now that your lips are burning mine, I'm beginning to see the light.
Anne Hampton Calloway, welcome to Charlotte and welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Nice to have you here. She's here because tomorrow night she's performing at 7:30 at the Halton Theater at CPCC in a program called Sing for the Cure. The first half is you, all by your lonesome, and the second half you'll be joined by, 110 other people to sing a suite or a piece called Sing for the Cure, and you'll be part of that as well.
Yes.
Yeah. You've been here before, though. You were here in, what, the 90s and the early 2000s?
That's right, yes. I did this piece in 2002 with Catherine Mann, the wonderful conductor mm-hmm. that we're working with tomorrow night. And in 1999, I performed with your wonderful symphony orchestra, and it was a real joy. It's a beautiful city, and I'm thrilled to be back.
I summed up all the things that you are known for a second ago. Pianist, lyricist, arranger, actress, singer, Tony Award, is it winner or nominee?
Nominee.
And more. But because you've done so much, what haven't you done? Let's begin with that question. What have you not done that you would like to do?
Well, actually, I'm talking to people about creating a radio show to celebrate the great singers of our country.
On NPR, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
is that
actually,
correct?
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
is there any pushback for that?
Well,
there shouldn't be.
There's a lot of indecision going on right now, and we're trying to actually have a very important call on Monday to try to wrap things up and get the ball rolling.
So it would be with Sing, you would be the host.
I would be the host, and I would bring some of the great singers of various genres in a live setting, and they would also recommend who they think is the up-and-coming person of their genre. And there would be sort of mentoring and interplay.
Cool.
And I feel like there's so much of really rotten singing going on in America on television. And I'd like for people to know what's behind the great singers.
I was going to talk about
how to tell a story.
I was going to ask you about that because there are all these shows on TV that celebrate the voice. Well, the voice being one.
Right, yeah.
And of course, American Idol being mm-hmm. the progenitor of all of this. And a lot of the people that come up, it seems to be about how many notes you can fit into a phrase and listen to me wail as opposed to listen to me interpret
right.
this song.
And actually, there's nothing wrong with singing a lot of notes if it comes from a real place. You know, when Aretha Franklin wails and she sings a lot of notes, it comes from the depths of her soul. But there are several singers now who think, oh, I want to be a star, and this is how you're supposed to sound if you want to be a star. And it really seems like our time is obsessed with fame. And then we watch these famous people who don't know how to deal with being famous take their lives. Or, you know, there's so many different interesting things going on with our country in terms of our obsession with fame. And
why do you do it?
I do it, I think, because it's a calling. It's just, it's who I am, and it's how I live and how I need to experience the most profound beauty in life.
But you've achieved a certain amount of notoriety in your life.
I've been clawing my way to the middle, and I'm almost there.
but when you look at some of these kids who skyrocket to fame on the basis of one or two songs, mm-hmm. and the song has a range of four notes, and does it just drive you crazy? Do you want to run screaming into the streets, or is that just showbiz?
Well, it is showbiz, and it is life, and it's something I try to observe and watch and say that there's something for everyone. My concern is that America is dumbing itself down, and that kids are not exposed to the legacy of our country's great music, jazz, and the great American songbook, and musical theater, and songs that were written with tremendous care and artistry, and that are timeless, and that anyone can relate to. And instead, people are fed songs that are not necessarily written from the heart or soul, or but there's plenty of songs that are being written that are like that. That's just not necessarily being heard.
They're not being exposed by radio, and they're not. I don't know how you find them because I heard a wonderful song by you yesterday that I didn't know existed. I think it was called "In a Restaurant by the Sea."
Oh, that's written by my friend John Bacchino. I sang his song on his record of original songs.
What a wonderful song.
Isn't that gorgeous?
Yeah, wonderful song. And I would never have found it had I not been reading up on you.
And he's one of those composers that deserves a lot more notoriety than he's received.
It's an exquisite tune. So you got your training at the foot of your mother, I take it.
That's right, Cheryl the Girl, who is still teaching voice and singing and an amazing human being who made singing and playing the piano seem so exciting. When I was a little baby, she put me on her knee and taught me how to play do re mi and sang. And it was I thought everybody's mother sang torch songs at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when kids came home from school, and I thought everybody's dad sang scat around the house and did interpretive dancing. I didn't realize that Liz and I were growing up. My sister, who's a Broadway star, I didn't realize that we were the Von Trapp family of Chicago.
Yes, your sister is Liz Calloway. And let's hear a little piece of a song that if you just listen to the words, you might imagine that they were written by two of you as children, dreaming about what might happen when you grow up.
How it quivers on the brink, everything gives you the shivers, makes you think there's so much stuff to say. You and me will be singing it like the birds, me with music and you.
And that's a song from Stephen Sondheim's Merrily We Roll Along, which I think was Liz's Broadway debut.
Yes, it was. And that's that last line that you ended that clip with, Someday Just Began, is one of my favorite lines in any song. I think it's gorgeous.
Well, he's a brilliant songwriter.
Yes, he has potential.
he might make something of himself someday. Yeah. But you were in Swing.
That's right.
On Broadway. Got the Tony nomination.
Yes, for that, and the Theatre World Award.
Is that what you wanted to be? What did you want to be? Because we talked about your growing up and your mom sang around the house and your father, who was in broadcasting, sang around the house when he came home, I guess. And
yes.
Your sister sang around the house. What did you want to be when you grew up? Did you want to be a singer? Did you want to be an actress? What did you want to do?
Well, I wanted to do everything, honestly. I was one of those kids, I would read biographies and autobiographies, and every time I would read about somebody doing something amazing, that would interest me. And then, oh, this person's an inventor. Well, maybe I'd like to be an inventor. This person's an athlete. Wow, that sounds exciting. This person is president. Maybe I should, when I was 10, I wanted to be president because I thought I could make inspiring speeches and uplift our nation.
I
try to actually do that with my music, but it was clear to me as a kid that I was interested in performing, writing, singing, acting, and that's pretty much the range of what I do. And I also loved painting and poetry, and I try to live the richness of my creative spirit in whatever way inspires me each day.
But I know that and to hear you, we've only heard little snippets of your voice so far, but when you listen to you sing in long form, there are little pieces of Broadway in there, there are little pieces of opera in there.
You
can scat like Ella.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over the place. And that takes, it seems to me, aside from talent, natural ability, it takes a lot of work. At what point did you buckle down and say, I'm going to work on my voice as an instrument?
I studied seriously as a vocal student after being encouraged to become an opera singer.
Mm.
And I studied with Dora Lindgren, who was a Swedish opera star, and she believed that I would be the next Beverly Sills, Renata Tibaldi. And then my parents did a wonderful thing. They got me season tickets to the Lyric Opera in Chicago. And I loved the music, but I didn't love the scene. I just thought, you know, if you're going to be an opera singer, you have to only do opera. Otherwise, you won't be the best. And why do opera if you can't be the best? So it was helpful for me. I continued to study classically, and it was a great foundation for me as a singer. But I realized that my love of songwriting and my love of jazz was something that I had to follow. And I'm almost the reverse of Renee Fleming. She couldn't make up her mind between being a jazz singer or an opera singer. And I felt that way too, but we made different choices.
Did you ever get together with her?
No, I would love to.
Switch roles?
I would love to. And she's made some lovely records of standards. I think she's one of the more successful opera singers who do that.
I've talked to a lot of musicians who say that they had, and who are not classical musicians. They are now jazz musicians or pop musicians, and they had classical training.
Yes.
And they were grateful that they had classical training. Why? What does it bring to you as a musician?
It brings a tremendous foundation of technique. If you have the tools, if you develop your range, if you sing, if you learn how to sing with a real craft of breathing and diction and phrasing and understand different languages and understand interpretive skills, it's something that allows you to draw from it in times of struggle. When you're sick, the classical training I had when I was doing 8 shows a week on Broadway, I sang through it all. I used my full 3-octave range, and no matter how sick I got, because I had that training, I knew how to negotiate my voice. And so it was a great foundation that I'm at.
Liz Hampton Calloway is our guest. She sings tomorrow night for The Cure at 7:30 at CPCC's Halton Theater. We're going to come back and spend more of the hour with her and hear more of her music as well. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAN. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Hendrick Acura, featuring a new fuel-efficient 2015 Acura TLX sports sedan with a 9-speed automatic transmission. New 2015 models arriving daily, HendrickAcura.com. And the historic Green Park Inn in Blowing Rock, listed on the National Historic Register. This 123-year-old manor hotel offers classic surroundings along with modern amenities. Reservations at GreenParkInn.com. Well, the dynamics of whether or not same-sex couples are able to marry keeps changing. More states are overturning bans and legalizing same-sex unions, and some courts seem to be hastening a trend toward allowing it, while other courts are slowing it down. Just a day or two before marriage licenses were to be provided to gays in Virginia, the Supreme Court stepped in to delay things, and so we're going to take a look at the legal challenges to and politics of same-sex marriage on this program Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. A grand jury hears evidence related to the killing of an unarmed black teen in Missouri. Texas Governor Rick Perry is booked on abuse of power charges. And the Supreme Court blocks same-sex marriages in Virginia.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and our guest today is Ann Hampton Calloway.
Time and again I've longed for adventure, something to make my heart beat the faster. What did I long for? I never I've found my adventure. Touching your hand, my heart beats the faster. All that I want in all of this world is you. A star, the dearest things I know are what you are. Someday my happy arms will hold you, and someday I know that move divine when all the things you are mine.
Called all the Things You Are from your To Ella With Love CD, your tribute to Ella Fitzgerald, who could scat like nobody's business, but you're right up there with her. What's the secret to that? I mean, what are you thinking in your head as you're doing this?
Well, I think scat singing is a marvelous musical conversation with fellow musicians based on chord changes, and sometimes the feeling of the lyrics inspire what kind of scat singing, what kind of interplay. But it's something that my dad did when I was a little girl, and he played a lot of Ella, and so it was something I was immediately drawn to, and it's one of my favorite things to do. It's just so much fun.
Could he sing, your dad, or was he
Yes, he actually
around?
He was kind of a crooner. In fact, I love the fact that today is his birthday. He has been gone for 5 years, and you opened the show with a song that he was known for singing. You know, at public speaking engagements, he would sing "Embraceable You," and I just think that's so perfect that you opened the show with that today. Thank you.
That's very cool. What was his name?
John Calloway.
John Calloway.
And he was the Charles Kuralt of Chicago.
Yeah, on radio and television.
Yes.
I'm told. But he sang, and he was a professional journalist.
Yes, Don't you say it? I mean, that's kind of, isn't that part of the job description?
Yeah, I come in every morning and sing, and then they turn the mic on.
You know, my dad wanted to be an actor when he moved to Chicago from West Virginia, and his acting teacher said, "Have you ever thought of journalism?"
You only have to play one role, serious.
Yeah, that's right.
If you're a journalist. But improvisation is one of the things that you are noted for. Is that something you're born with? Is it something you learn to do through the technique, the training, the classical music training that you had? Where does that come from? Because you're out there on a tight wire with no net.
I think it must be a certain kind of personality trait or a type of brain formation, because a lot of people are so intimidated by the idea of improvisation. And For some reason, ever since I was a little girl, I've loved to make up things. When I was bad at my Beethoven studies, I would throw away the Beethoven book and make up fake Beethoven-sounding music on the piano. But when I was starting out in piano bars in New York, I decided I wanted to bring people in, so I started making up songs about them, and I would just do stuff like that. Part of it was inspired by a novel I read by Bob Dylan, of all people, who wrote a book called Tarantula with free association writing. The entire novel was written just the top of his head, whatever came to mind, sort of James Joyce. And I was so intrigued by this, I did a lot of journal writing like that, and I really developed a trust in diving off the cliff into the unknown. And just, it was so exciting to find out how much was inside of my brain. And then I started doing it at the piano and rhyming. So.
Well, yes, you do this. I saw you do this on the old daytime Rosie O'Donnell
show. Oh, yes.
And then I saw you do it, I guess it was a fundraiser for KPLU, which is a public radio station in
Seattle.
Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Where you ask for 8 words or phrases mm-hmm. from the audience, and they just throw out these ridiculous non-sequiturs.
And I'll be doing that tomorrow night.
Okay.
Yes.
And you create a song.
Yes.
On the spot.
That's right.
Now, have you ever failed?
I don't think I've ever recall failing per se, but I have certain songs that I think, oh, why wasn't that recorded? Oh, my God, that was so exciting. Well, most of the songs are very playful and funny, and the audience, believe it or not, sings along. I have symphony orchestras that end the song with me, and I get them all playing the last chord. It's just a hilarious, fascinating thing. But the most beautiful time I ever used improvisation was after September 11th. I invited a group of people, singers and non-singers, to bless the people who had died. And over a period of an hour and a half, the extraordinary improvisation that everybody did in that room was absolutely magnificent. People had never really made up a song or even sung in front of other people. We're singing the most beautiful poetry and the most beautiful blessings. So it is something that everyone can do, and it's just a wonderful part of being a creative human being.
Was that recorded?
It may have been, but I never received a copy of it. But it was probably the most exciting and most beautiful musical experience of my life.
You are one of the keepers of the flame for the Great American Songbook. Somebody told me the other day, and I don't know if this is true or not, that Lunis McGlowan, who was a local pianist, composer, lyricist, and whose name is on a theater down the hall, and who worked for years at WBTV, Lunis McGlowan coined that phrase, the Great American Songbook. Somebody told me that.
Really?
It
was coined right here in Charlotte.
May or may not be true, but he certainly believed strongly in it and supported singers and musicians who supported it. The Great American Songbook, of course, is comprised of the music of composers like Jerome Kern and George Gershwin and Cole Porter and Rodgers and Hart, and it goes on and on. What made those writers, the music that they wrote, so special and worthy of your time and talent to keep that music from the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s going?
It's a very interesting question that I don't know if I've ever come up with the perfect answer, but I will say that I think these composers and lyricists were able to capture the most important human experiences in a way of using words and music that feel like someone actually is confessing this extraordinary moment. A lot of these songs were written for the theater. They were written for specific situations, moments of, you know, falling in love, losing somebody, questioning the main principles of life. There's so many different key moments in life that they found human colloquial ways of expressing the unexpressible. And the way they're crafted is such that they feel familiar, they feel comfortable, they feel like a friend. However, there's such profundity in them. There's simplicity and profundity. You understand them the moment you hear them, but every time you hear them again and again, there's other layers of meaning and there's other possibilities in them.
What happened? Did that movement just run out of gas? Did society move on? Because all those songs were written at a time when the world moved much slower than it does today. And we were more, I think, innocent and sentimental, perhaps, or at least that's the impression you get when you hear those songs. What happened?
Actually, I think a lot of those songs are written in a time of a tremendous anxiety.
Yeah,
there were two world wars going on, and people thought maybe the world was going to end. So I think a lot of the songwriters were trying to encourage people to believe that there was hope. And I think that was a kind of a heroic part of the Great American Songbook, was it was, you know, making sure that people would not stop believing in what was good in life. And I think then people decided to evolve into different ways of expressing other thoughts. And I think maybe there was a certain complacency. But there's, you know, I think there's another chapter of the Great American Songbook. Some of the singer-songwriters of the 70s, I think, were writing Carole King and Joni Mitchell is not American, but there's a certain part of the pop, you know, Paul Simon, they write Leonard Cohen, people of not necessarily American background, but they were writing poetry and they were writing things in a new way, mm-hmm. and maybe in a more personal way that had a different sound.
And you've recorded some Joni Mitchell songs, and you have written with Carole King.
That's right. I know, it's kind of unbelievable.
What a kick that must have been.
That was one of the most wonderful days of my life. I ran into her in L.A. She came to a show that my sister and I were doing, and I had the audacity to ask her if she'd like to write a song at the session I was recording her song. And she said yes. I couldn't believe it. But she did say, oh, I don't want to do it until the day of your recording, because she knew I wrote improvs.
Uh-huh.
So we got in the studio at 11, and by 1 o'clock we had written our song, and she taught it to the band. She stayed and sang backup vocals, and she stayed when I recorded Will You Love Me Tomorrow and wept. And just, it was, I've never been in front of somebody who was so incredibly generous and lovely.
How do you sing Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow in front of the woman who wrote it and founded her career pretty much on that song? How do you sing that in front of her?
You sing it because the song is so beautiful and so powerful and creates such a vivid world, and I have such a strong emotional connection with those lyrics, that the song, and that's the beauty of these songs, once you enter the song, it is a complete world that nothing can get in, you know, interrupt. And so it's, you know, I spent a lot of my life training for those moments of you know, unintended beauty, and when I finished and afterwards saw her face, it was just tremendously beautiful.
Well, it comes, I think, from the fact that you have confidence in your own abilities and your own talent, because you do this a lot. You're very brave. You've done a whole series of songs that are signature songs from other famous women, and you recorded a classic song on your CD At Last that I don't know many people have the guts to record, because it's such an iconic piece of music.
When all the world is a hopeless jumble and the raindrops tumble all around, heaven opens a magic lane. When all the clouds darken up the skyway, there's a rainbow highway to be found, leading from your window pane to a place behind the sun. Just a step beyond the somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of.
Carolyn wrote that. One of the composers that make up the Great American. You can leave it up a little bit. Great American Songbook. Judy Garland sang that, and it's such an iconic piece that her daughters refuse to sing.
I know.
I've only heard a few other people sing Over the Rainbow. When you sing something like that, are you thinking about how iconic it is and how only one person really is noted for that song, and what am I going to do to make it mine, or am I going to offend somebody by doing it differently than Judy?
Well, I hadn't actually ever sung that song in public until the centennial of Harold Arlen. Mm. And I was asked to sing it, and I thought, well, boy, this is going to be tough, because that song was one of the first songs I fell in love with as a baby. I mean, I heard that on that little postage stamp black and white TV once a year. It would play The Wizard of Oz, and that was, to me, one of the great musical moments to watch Judy Garland sing that. But I really believe that that song is one of the greatest songs ever written. It really speaks to the essence of who we are, the dreamer inside all of us. And so I thought, it's my job to find my own statement in this song. And it's my job to do that with all these songs, including my own songs. I had a teacher in high school at Nutria East, Mrs. Pink, who was my English teacher. And I said, Mrs. Pink, how am I going to be a writer? How am I going to be an artist when so many great artists, they've said it all. Why do I have a right to be doing this? And she said, Anne, no one has ever had your life. No one has ever experienced what you've experienced. Share your life, share your experiences, your feelings, the way you look at life, and you're going to be okay. And that has guided me ever since. So that's what I do with these songs. I start with the lyric, and I find my own feeling in them. And if I didn't love doing that, I wouldn't be a singer. I wouldn't be doing these great classics.
What are you thinking about when you're actually singing the words? And I'm sure you do it differently every time you do it, but what are you thinking about? What's going through your head?
I frequently have scenarios I've created. I just got through teaching some master classes in New York with my sister and Sally Mays and Wendy Lane Bailey, and we were talking about the craft with these singers. We were developing more craft of interpretation, and part of it is who am I singing to? Where am I? What has just happened? I put a moment in time, or I have an intention. A lot of times when I sing this song in concerts, I'm singing not just for the people in the hall. I am singing for people who aren't here anymore. And I have my little cloud, and my dad's in that cloud, and tomorrow night I'll be singing that song. And my very dear friend, Miller Wright, who died last year, will be in that cloud. And I believe that music is a bridge between heaven and earth. So in this particular song, I am connecting personally with a sense of what's beyond this living plane, and the dreams of what the human soul is all about. So I have a lot of imagery that goes along with that. And I see their faces, and I sometimes see their faces looking back at me, and I feel a connection with them. And so it's a profound experience. The audience doesn't necessarily know that.
Right.
Sometimes I sing my own song at the same time in my symphony show, the Streisand Songbook, and I'm literally singing for world peace all over the world. I'm not just singing for the hall. I'm literally trying to send a blessing, and I have a story, so for each song I sing, and it changes.
Anne Hampton Calloway sings tomorrow night, 7:30, Halton Theater at CPCC. We're going to come back with more of our conversation in just a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Got to Be NC Competition Dining Series Fire in the City, starting in August. Guests judge six-course dinners created by competing local chefs. Reservations at competitiondining.com. It's Friday. That means it's the weekly news roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, the National Hour first. And in that hour, a grand jury hears evidence related to the killing of an unarmed black teen in Missouri. Texas Governor Rick Perry is booked on abuse of power charges, and the Supreme Court blocking same-sex marriages in Virginia. A panel of journalists joins Diane to talk about those stories and more, then the International Hour at 11. It all begins in 20 minutes right here on WFAE. If you'd like to join our conversation with Anne Hampton Calloway, now's your chance at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks, or you can search for us on Facebook or Twitter, and we're coming right back.
My car Dave was in the shop over 40 times in 8 months. Hi, I'm Paula Poundstone from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So one time, I slammed the door, and as I do so, the back of the front seat just fell off. I had never realized how important the back of the front seat is until the following day when I was driving up a hill and began to slide into the back seat. Turn your car into the programs you love.
Donate your car through Car Talk's vehicle donation program. Call 1-866-789-8627.
At last, my love has come along. My love. Like a song. At last, the skies above are blue. My heart was wrapped in clover. On the night I looked at you, I found a dream that I can speak to, a dream that I can call my own.
I don't know what to say about that. Anne Hampton Calloway, our guest today, and I, because it's everything. I mean, it's a masterclass in singing, that song right there.
Oh, thank you.
It goes from opera to Broadway to blues. It's just remarkable.
Well, I appreciate your getting into it so much. And that was another one of those songs where I thought, oh, I never touch this. But then I fell madly in love, and there was no song that would express exactly the finally. You mean I really get to be happy? And so I was so glad I just got over my fear of Etta James not liking me and just sang the song.
I think she'd like that. You brought with us, a brand new CD.
That's right.
We will be the first, I'm told,
in the country,
they
in the world.
In the world to play this song. Now, the last time this happened, we got the person who sang the song that I played first got a gold record for it.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm liking this.
It was Unforgettable, Natalie Cole and Nat King Cole.
Oh, my goodness.
And somehow, I got a bootleg copy of that record before it was released.
Really, Mike?
Yes, and played it.
And that's the effect you have on people?
That's what it is.
I like you very much,
that's
Mike.
You are. This will go gold. And I want another gold record for my wall.
Yes, absolutely.
So we have a couple of things that you suggested that we... First of all, what's the name of the album?
It's called From Sassy to Divine, the Sarah Vaughan Project.
And
it was recorded live at Dizzy's in New York City. And it's a celebration of one of the greatest jazz singers or any kind of singer of the 20th century, Sarah Vaughan, who was one of my favorite singers and great inspirations. And I'm just thrilled that we were able to do a live album because many of her best albums were live albums.
Mm-hmm.
And It was a real thrilling experience.
See, this is what I mean by guts, because you've done these signature, the signature album, where you did all these signature tunes of other singers. Like, no one sings Peggy Lee's Is That All There Is, but Peggy Lee.
Right.
I'd never heard anybody sing it other than her, but you did, and you did Twisted, which is Annie Ross's song from Lambert, Hendrick, and Ross, and a bunch of other songs that nobody did, but these people, and the Judy Garland song we just played. So, what would you like us to play from this new?
Well, I would love for you to share Send in the Clowns. That's a song I used to do back in the piano bar days of my early career, and then it became sort of overdone and a cliche. But along came Sarah Vaughan, who turned it into a magnificent aria, and I saw her do this song at the Blue Note. And I was sitting in the front row, and Angela Beaufield was in the audience, and it was a packed Saturday night, and it was just a magnificent performance. She sang as if she wanted us to know everything she'd ever learned about life. And when she sang this song, I was just utterly blown away. When I was researching this show to put a portrait together of this iconic singer, I found out that that week was the week that she found out she had terminal lung cancer. And she didn't tell anyone. And so that brought such an incredible meaning to the qualities that she brought to the performance. So I thought, well, what was she really feeling when she was singing Send in the Clowns and those lyrics? And I completely changed the arrangement of the song to mirror my experience and what I thought her experience was to sing those words now that she knew that her life was not going to last much longer.
Aunt Hampton Calloway and Stephen Sondheim's Send in the Clowns, the first time anyone will hear it on the radio ever. Wait a minute, that's the wrong cut, my darling. It's the wrong cut. It's number 10, right?
Yes.
Cut 10?
No, it's actually 11. There's an introduction.
Oh, cut. So this is the hazard we have when we actually do things unplanned. So let's try.
Makes you lovably human.
Ooh, really? Can't have that.
Isn't it rich? Are we a pair? Me here at last on the ground, you in midair. Send in the clouds. Isn't it bliss? Don't you approve? One who keeps tearing around, one who can't move. Where are the my fault, I feel. I thought that you'd want what I want. Sorry, my dear. And where are the clowns? Quick, send in the clowns. Don't bother, they're here.
You've completely changed the chord structure of that song. The underlayment is like nobody else's underlayment. I mean, when Sinatra did it, when Cleo Ling did it, when I'm trying to think who else did it.
Barbra Streisand.
Barbra Streisand, Judy Collins. When they all did it, they did it completely differently.
Yes.
Gutsy.
Well, it came from the thought of Sarah finding out she had lung cancer. I mean, it was... What do you do with that information?
Right.
And that inspired the interpretation of that.
And that's why Ann Hampton Calloway is here, because she's singing tomorrow night at the Halton Theater at CPCC's campus in a show called Sing for the Cure, a proclamation of hope. Part of that program is devoted to a choral work that Susan G. Komen for The Cure commissioned several years ago. And the artistic director and choral conductor for that part of the program joins us now, Catherine Mahon. Welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for bringing Ann Hampton Calloway.
She's a pretty good friend to drag along.
And also along with us is a woman you've all known probably as a TV personality, but perhaps did not know that she also sings. Well, she does. And she's also a breast cancer survivor who will be singing tomorrow night as well, Maura Quinn.
Thanks. Glad to be here. Hi.
How are you, by the way?
Oh, very well. Thank you.
You got your diagnosis of breast cancer in the throes of the Democratic National Convention. You work at your day job is at the Charlotte Center City Partners, and you had your hands full with the Democratic National Convention the day you got your diagnosis.
I did. I got it a week and a half before the DNC arrived. Yeah.
Wow.
It was, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Quite the distraction. But actually, it was a blessing in disguise because I was too distracted to worry. Which was a good thing. It was a very good thing.
And you're okay now?
No evidence of disease, so that's a good thing.
And you've had cancer, Ann Hampton.
I got my diagnosis a month before her, and
we were
talking about the, you know, finding out. Mm. And in the midst of, I was putting together my Streisand Symphony show, and I was opening with the Boston Pops and Alan Bergman a month later. So I said, you know, can I have my surgery right after this? And I mean, it was just like, couldn't pick worse timing. But that's the way life is, you know. And I had called up Sylvia McNair, and I said, is this going to change my singing? And she said, yes, it's not going to change your voice, but it's going to make you sing with more gratitude to be alive. And I don't know, well, how was that for you?
That's right. It makes me feel like I'm a better person. It has changed my attitude about life. Yeah, I live out loud. It's one of our songs, right?
I
live out loud.
You've conducted this work before, Catherine. What makes it special for you?
This is an extraordinary use of choral music, and it's an extraordinary, to me, it's really entertainment at its best. And what I mean by that is we take listeners on a journey that's an emotional journey, it's a personal journey, it's a public journey, it's a shared journey, it's a private journey, and it's a very unique piece of music. It is Sing for the Cure is a gorgeous work. It's about an hour and 15 minutes long.
Wow.
And it really is extraordinarily well crafted. Pamela Martin Tomlinson was the lyricist for the librettist for this, and she actually interviewed breast cancer patients and healthcare workers and caregivers and family members. So when Anne talks about writing coming from that very authentic place, the poetry for this is written magnificently and was very carefully and passionately crafted by someone who really immersed herself in what the cancer journey is. And so it's an extraordinary text, and it's beautifully set by 10 different musicians. So there's every style of music. There's some pieces that sound classical. There's a jazz piece. There's a blues piece. There's a gospel piece. There's some sort of anthems that are very hopeful. And obviously, the main goal of this is for people to not be alone with their diagnosis and with their experience of cancer, mm-hmm. and for them to know that there absolutely is hope and we're going to find a cure.
There are 110 singers on the stage.
There are.
Who are these people? Where did you find them?
And that's a good question, because I love the all the – tell them the story. It's
there's
amazing.
Some great stories. This was all done by email, the miracle of social media, et cetera. We sent around a flyer. There are 30 different choral organizations represented in this one choir. There are 15 families where more than one member of the family is participating. We've got fathers and daughters and husbands and wives, and we have one family that's a mother, daughter, father and the Chinese exchange student. So it's a very and we have a number of guys singing who are there because their wife came to the first rehearsal and went home and got them and drugged them to the second rehearsal, and they've stayed. So it's really an extraordinary choir. The choir has become a bit of a family of its own.
Are you in the choir?
I am in the choir, yes.
Because that's the only way I would have the guts to be on the same stage with Ann Hampton Calloway and sing. I'd have to be with 109 other people.
Yes, that is absolutely true. I mean, it's a very good choir. It's a very talented singers, and it's very good. You know, you might think, you know, you hear Sing for the Cure, and you think, oh, it's a talent show. No, really not so much. It's very, very talented singers.
So you're singing the first half of the show tomorrow night.
Yes.
By yourself. It's you.
I'm accompanying myself at the piano. I have a set of some fabulous songs, and I'm doing my Charlotte improv. And then I will join the choir and do this marvelous piece. And it's going to be exciting, and I love the different faces of this. To me, it's not just, I mean, if you've never had cancer, you don't know that many people have had cancer.
Everybody knows somebody.
Everybody knows somebody. But it's really also a celebration of life and not taking it for granted. And that the will to live and how powerful it is and all the different demons that we fight no matter what we're going through in life to get to the beauty of this miracle of living. And so that's the power of this piece, I think.
How do people get tickets?
Oh, great question.
Thank you. I'm known for that.
Wow. The experience is really showing. Halton Theater. There's a box office at Halton Theater, and you can go online to tix.cpcc.edu. There are about 100 tickets left.
That's all?
Yeah.
That's a big house. That's a good thing.
It is a very good thing. And I'll tell you, obviously, Sing for the Cure is a unique work. Yeah. Getting to hear it done by a church choir in a gym would be special. But to hear it done in a theater with Ann Hampton Calloway, extraordinary.
Sing for the Cure, tomorrow night, 7:30, Halton Theater, CPCC, featuring Ann Hampton Calloway and Maura Quinn.
Absolutely.
In the choir.
Thank you for the hour. What a great pleasure.
Thank you, Mike.
Our love is here to stay.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins.